Janeway, Fox, Spear, Locke's acting very weird, Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife, Boimler, Tendy's dog, Ransom is very harsh, Spore Drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. Beecher, Batliff, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red, Data's cat, Kim Peck's at, Q has had enough of that, beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go!
We are about to series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series, well, good evening, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe. It is Thursday, March 7th, 2024. It is 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, or 4:30 Pacific time for the rest of my co-hosts, and we are here live. Welcome to episode 583 of Trek Talking. I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim. And before we get too far, I want to go around the horn and say hello to my awesome Trekspert. And we'll start out with someone who's not in Portland, and we'll say hello to Charles. He's out in Las Vegas. How you doing, Charles?
I'm doing all right. Ready to do some Trek Talking.
It's going to be fun. It's actually Friday's Eve. If you take a deep breath, if you sniff it, yep, yeah, that's it. You can smell Friday. It's right there. It's right there. And so we're going to help you bring in your Friday on a happy note. And now we're going to swing out to Portland, where I have my triple play on standby right now. We'll start off with David the Donut Guy. How you doing tonight, David?
I'm on standby.
You're on standby? I guess that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, though.
And we also
have a
big
bowl of popcorn.
Popcorn? So you're not the donut guy anymore. You're the popcorn guy.
Okay.
Popcorn's good. Popcorn's good. And we also have out in Portland our very own toy guy. And, of course, I'm talking about Paul. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Hey, Jim, I'm doing okay. It's been a crazy busy week, but ready to blow off some steam and have some fun on the Final Frontier.
And it is going to be fun for sure. And wrapping up my Trekspurts, as I said, in Portland as well, we have our very own Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I'm doing much better, Jim. I was just on Arrakis about an hour ago, and I'm still kind of peeling my still suit off. You know, these things are sticky in that desert heat, so it's taking a little bit to get it off. But just happy to be back on planet Earth once again and ready to talk about my other favorite franchise, Star Trek.
Are you saying you went and saw Dune again? Did you see it a second time?
I'm going to go, but no, it was just a joke. But I
see.
Well, let's
I'm
go
very,
again.
Paul, you know how literal I am. So
yeah, Paul and I went and saw it, and it was unbelievable. But that's not what this show is about. But you should go see it.
But we may be talking about Dune in a future show, though. You never can tell what's going to come up.
I'd be into that.
Oh yeah. Well, you won't be here.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You're not going to be here for that one. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. So you can let your fingers do the walking and call Trek Talking right now. We'd love to hear from you guys. We're going to be talking about Sela. That's right, Sela, the Romulan commander from TNG, played by none other than Denise Crosby. So we're going to be talking about Sela. So if you have any opinions or, you know, you just want to talk about Sela, give us a call, 646-668-2433, and we will get you on the air. Joe Lantru, we'd love to hear from you. So before we get too far, though, we do have a caller on the line. Let's see who we got. Good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk, and what's your name and where you're calling us from tonight? Hello? Caller, can you hear me? Gremlins, that happens from time to time. Caller, are you there?
Are they on mute?
that could be. I'm going to silence the caller, and if the caller hangs around a little while, I'll check back in another minute or two. So let's put the caller on silence there, and we'll get back to the caller. So every week we start off our show with our fan shout-outs, and that's where we say thank you guys, our faithful followers, for supporting the podcast. And how do you do that? You just go to our Facebook page, and you'll see a post pinned to the top saying, hey, dude, where are you listening from? And, you know, just tell us. And you want to try to get my attention because there's a lot of posts there that I have to go through. So if you leave emojis, that usually gets my attention. So leave some emojis. And if you see a heart next to your name from yours truly, Uncle Jim, that means you are going to be featured in a future fan shout-out, and you want to tune in to hear your name immortalized forever, bouncing through the cosmos as a Star Trek fan for all of eternity. What more could you ask for, huh? Really? So, Eric, would you like to get us started off with our fan shout-outs for this week?
I absolutely would. We're just going to bounce to the other side of the equator here, and we're going to say hello this week to Ariel Raul Toliso, who's saying hello to us from Buenos Aires in Argentina and sending us a little live long and prosper emoji. Thank you so much, sir. Peace and long life to you, and thank you for supporting Trek Talking down there in the beautiful, beautiful country of Argentina. Also, hello this week, and thanks for supporting us to top fan Min Potter, who's saying hello to us from Ontario, Canada, sending us two Canadian flags stuck together with a heart in between. That's very sweet. I love that. Top fan status means Min interacts with us a ton on our Facebook page, and we really do appreciate that. It just shows us how much you love us, and, you know, we love you too. Thanks, Min. Saying hello this week as well to Zsolt Memnon Szilagyi, who's saying hello to us from Dunakeszi, Hungary, sending us a Hungarian flag. Thank you, Zsolt, so much for saying hello to us from that beautiful country as well. And last on my list, we're saying hello this week to Sandra Tipton, who's checking in from Cheshire in the UK. That's right, just across the pond, one of our strongest allies in Star Trek. Sandra, thank you so much for saying hello to us. Charles, do you want to bring it back home?
I sure will. In fact, I will bring it home. Let's start off with a warm welcome to Amy Mrochenik from right here in Las Vegas. I'm not sure if I'm familiar with you, Amy, but I took a quick look on Facebook, and you know quite a few people from both ships. So come over and say hi. And I got top fan Judy DeChant from Kingston, Tennessee, who sends a U.S. flag and a happy face. So Judy's probably in a good mood right now. Welcome to Martin A. Knapp from Waterford, Michigan. And warm welcome to Virgil Cruz from Bakersfield, California, down the road. David, who's on your list?
Well, I can be pretty sad right now because I got no emojis on my list. So let's see. Let's start off with Melva Brown from Texas, USA. And next on the list is a top fan to Jim Pent from Virginia. Let's see. Next one is Paul Juarez from Green Valley, Missouri. Sorry if I butchered your last name there.
Juarez, brother.
Juarez. Okay. And last on my list is another top fan, Randy Dutton from Bloomington, Illinois. Paul, who's on your list?
All right, man, thanks. We're going to head back over to other continents here, and we're going to say hello to top fan Nelly Birk-Nielsen in Odense, Denmark. All kinds of live long and prosper signage and Danish flags unfurled there. Nelly, thanks so much for being a fan and sharing your enthusiasm of Star Trek. Saying hello to David Pinavaria in Milan, Italy, one of the fashion capitals of the planet. Flags flying proudly and the Vulcan hand sign going up as well there in Milan. Milano, Davide, thank you so much for being a fan. Great to hear from you. Also, we're hearing from Tommy Astorsson in Varberg, Sweden. A lot of Star Trek fans in the Nordic countries, for sure, in Varberg especially. Great to hear from you, Tommy. And then finally, heading a little bit further south in our continental journey, we say hello to Benjamin Russell in the great town of Johannesburg, South Africa. Flag flying with esteem, Benjamin. Great to hear from you all. It's always lovely to know that fondness for Star Trek is a global phenomenon that helps us all feel a bit more united. Right, Uncle Jim?
Absolutely. And David, don't feel bad, because not only do I not have any fancy emojis, but I don't even have a top fan. So that's okay. I know. I'm going to persevere. I'm going to push my way through anyways. So we want to say thank you to Joe Schneider, who's listening to us in New Hampshire, USA, just over the border from where I'm at right now. We also want to say thank you to Marina Riker, who's listening to us in Maryland, USA. And, of course, Greg Peter, we want to say kabla, who's listening to us in Greenleaf, Colorado, U.S. of A. as well. And finally, last but definitely not least on my list, we want to say hello and thank you and live long and prosper to Daniel Kornacek, who's listening to us in South Portland, Maine. I didn't know there was a Portland, Maine.
Yeah, in fact,
Maine, Portland.
Interesting tidbit, Portland, Oregon could have been either Portland or Boston when it was first named, and a coin flip determined that it turned out to be Portland instead of Boston, Oregon. Ding.
Interesting. Very, very, I did not know that.
Me neither.
All right, guys, let's see if our listener is still listening. So listener, if you're hearing us, I'm going to turn on the mic and we're going to see if we can say hello. All right, let's see. Hello, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk, and what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello? Listener? Okay.
Bummer.
All right. Well, the listener is still there, still showing up on my board. Maybe we have some technical difficulties. I don't know, but we're going to move along. We're going to keep moving on. So before we get too far, though, I think it's time for some...
And you know what that music means. It's once again time to put on your thinking caps and join us for Star Trek Trivia Time with Uncle Jim.
Okay. This is going to be some interesting trivia because we're not talking about an episode. So let's see. Eric, you want to go first?
Sure.
Okay. And you guys want to listen, there's a theme to this week's trivia, and the theme is related to next week's Trek Talking episode. And I'll leave it at that, see if you guys can figure it out as we go along.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
It's very complicated. There's a lot going on here. So we're gonna leave it to you guys and see if you can figure it out. I have total faith in all of you guys. I think you'll be able to figure it out by maybe the second question. Pretty complicated. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. This is tough. This is really tough. All right. Who wrote the TOS episode, The Trouble with Tribbles?
Well, Jim, I have started doing my research for next week, so I do happen to know that it is all about the guy we're having next week, David Gerald. He wrote
that's
that.
That's right. Good. Exactly right. Bing, 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 bing. Give that man a tribble. Okay. All right. Let's see who's next. Paul, are you ready next?
Sure.
This is a tough one. You're going to have to really dig deep for the answer here.
I'll try to.
Who wrote?
Pull out a plum.
So, more tribbles, more troubles for Star Trek, the animated series.
Waiting for that symbol to die down there. It's a hell of an echo. That would also be the original guy who wrote the original series episode, David Gerald.
That's right. I see a pattern. Charles, you ready for your question?
Sure.
Okay. Who made it canon in the TAS episode, Bem, that Kirk's middle initial, T, stood for Tiberius?
Would that also happen to be next week's guest, David Cheryl?
That's right. That's right. See, there's a pattern here. I told you guys it would be tough to catch on, but you're right. He wrote into that episode that the T stood for Tiberius, and then they later carried that through. I believe it was Star Trek VI.
Well, actually, you know, there's more to it than that, Jim. Yes, it is in that episode, but the first instance of Tiberius is actually from a novel where it first showed up, right? It was one of the original Bantam novels, and I believe, if memory serves, it was The Galactic Whirlpool, written by, can you guess, David Gerald. So originally used in his fiction in that novel there was where Tiberius showed up and then carried over in subsequent stuff on screen. So there you go. A little extra knowledge. Knowledge is good.
I'm seeing a pattern here. I'm seeing a pattern developing here. Okay. David, are you ready? This is a tough one. This is a tough one.
Just answer it now.
It's a really, really tough one.
Spiro Agnew.
Who wrote the book The World of Star Trek?
Me! Just kidding.
You, that's right.
It was David
Gerald. Gerald.
See, we're catching on. We're catching on. All right, Eric, we're back up to the top again. You ready?
Yeah.
These
Madonna, me. Oh, my God.
They're getting harder.
You can skip the drum roll. I know the answer.
Yeah.
They're getting harder, okay? Star Trek Deep Space Nine. As a security guard, the Trials and Tribulations episode, which was set during the time frame of the original series.
Hmm. Well, I didn't realize that that David Gerald was also actually in that episode. That's kind of cool.
Me neither. A fun little
tidbit there.
They were trying to get him into the Trouble with Tribbles episode, but due to a conflict, he couldn't get into that episode.
Wow.
But I do have a little bit of info based on my research. He was in Star Trek The Motion Picture as well, which we're going to talk about next week. So that's pretty cool.
Hmm.
Okay. All right. These questions aren't getting any easier, Paul. Are you ready?
Oh, hold on, man. Let me tighten the seatbelt. There we go. All right. I think I can handle it. I'm ready to go.
Who wrote the novelization of Star Trek The Next Generation series premiere, Encounter at Farpoint?
You know, I'm not much of a gambling guy, but I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that it was David Gerald?
That's right, David Gerald. My God.
The crowd
you guys
goes wild.
Are brilliant.
Amazing. Wow.
For ears this week, for sure.
I can see those lap revolving calendar pages going here. It's just
all right. So let's see. That brings us up to Charles. Charles, are you ready? Because this is a tough one. I don't know if you're going to know this one, but we're going to give it a shot.
I bet it's David. I'm getting David Gerald probably wrote Battle for the Planet of the Apes.
He did. He wrote the novelization for Battle for the Planet of the Apes because he's a very well-rounded individual. He's done more than just Star Trek, which brings us to our final question of the night, which goes to David. Are you ready, David?
Yep.
This one might be tough for David because I don't know if David watched this on Saturday morning growing up like I did. But we're going to give it a shot because I bet you David knows the answer anyways. Who created the Sleestaks for the TV series Land of the Lost?
I'm going to change it up a bit and say his pet Tribble. It could have been. It gave him some ideas. So.
You know, you never can tell.
I'm going to have to go with David again.
Yeah. That's pretty tough, isn't it? So, guys, you may be wondering, you know, why all these questions? Why is the answer the same for every one of these questions? And, you know, who wants to fill our listeners in on why all these questions had the same answer?
I think it has something to do with a guest that's coming next week.
Yes. Yes, you guys definitely want to tune in next week because you can hear all these stories and so much more next week right here on Trek Talk. And what more can you ask for, right? Okay. Oh, there we go. Those tribbles, they get underfoot all the time. That's right. We're going to be having fun next week. You definitely want to tune in because we're going to be talking to the man himself, David Gerald. All right. Are we ready? Well, let's
do
see
it.
If our listener. I'm going to see if our listener is there one more time before we dive into Sela. All right. Good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And where are you calling us from tonight? Hello?
Wah, wah.
Okay. Wah, 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 wah.
I think they just want to listen.
Yeah, maybe they just want to listen. That's all good.
They can listen. That's fine. No pressure at all. Okay, so let's talk about Sela, played by Denise Crosby herself. So basically, this is a great character, I think. I really think it's a very creative way to bring the character back onto the series after she left in season one. Basically, she is her own daughter. You know, they wrote a great episode called Yesterday's Enterprise, where the mirror universe version of Tasha Yar goes back in time, gets captured by the Romulans at the Battle of Narendra 3, and gets taken prisoner, and then has a child, which ends up being Sela, and she's killed trying to escape, so they say. But we know how these Romulans are. They love to lie, right? So is she really dead? Is Tasha Yar really dead? I don't know. She said so, but no body. It's not true. And she comes back to kind of be a thorn in the side of Jean-Luc Picard. And she shows up in the episode Unification, which is a great episode because it marks the return of Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. And this is the first time that we see her. And then she would come back again in Redemption Part 1 and 2, which is great because we have Gowra and we have the Duras sisters. We have all kinds of great stuff going on in that episode. So she's been in some real pivotal episodes through Star Trek. And we're going to talk about her tonight. So, Eric, this was your baby. So why don't you take the reins and get us started?
Sure. Yeah, I think that the idea for this episode was kind of spurred on by some beta canon that we just recently got, which was the Star Trek Defiant Annual comic came out a couple of weeks ago. And the entire story is all about Sela. And that kind of got me interested in going back and, you know, checking her out as a character again, because I think that she was sort of sprinkled throughout TNG. Like Jim was saying, she shows up in season 3. She shows up a little bit in season 4. And then she kind of has like the 1-2 punch in season 5 with Redemption and Unification. And it was always confusing for me. Now I kind of understand where she comes from and who her actual mom is, but there's like some timey-wiminess to that too, that you sort of have to just be okay with. But that being said, I think when we do get to talking about the comic here, that timey-wiminess I think really plays into this, because in the comic, I think at the end of the day, the Sela that we see in this comic is kind of looking for her origins, her place, she's looking for a stronger connection to, you know, the mother that was gone, and maybe even the Tasha that, you know, wasn't her actual mom. So there's some complexities in there that I think we should dive into in a little bit, but I guess first thought that maybe we should just talk about Sela versus Tasha, right? So
yeah, I actually
Jim
got
was,
a question about that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So in the comics, does it actually show like the body of Tasha Yar as being dead, or has they not mentioned her at all?
They've mentioned her, and in the comics, they say that she's dead. They confirm in this one that she's dead. And of course, that's the same story that we get from Sela herself in, I think it's the Unification. One of those two episodes, she actually describes that story like in canon. So that's a fact that we know for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but when it comes to Cela versus Tasha, you know, so Tasha was such a cool character. You know, she came on TNG. She was a security officer. She had this really rough background to her that she talks about a couple of times in a couple of different TNG episodes. And then she doesn't even in the end make it through an entire season, right? She gets killed off in episode 23, I think, with Skin of Evil. Which was too bad, and I know that there's a bunch of reasons that the character was written out of the series. We're not here to talk about that, but I do think it's interesting to think about Tasha as, you know, a parent, albeit alternate universe Tasha, but a parent of Cela, because I think some of that stuff is starting to come through in what we're seeing with Cela. So, for example, there's a toughness, right? Tasha was very tough. Had to make it through some nasty things, making her way through. She was smart. And I would say when it comes to Cela, then you add kind of the Romulan-ness of the cunning side of things. Her father was supposedly, wasn't he like a general or something? Or he was the guy who ran the camp that she was living in?
Correct.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
Yes.
Yeah, so, you know, you got to figure that this guy, after he kind of gets control of Cela and starts to raise her, he's like, no, you're gonna be raised in the Romulan ways, and I'm going to try and get all the human out of you that I possibly can. And so I think that the character grows up with a gigantic chip on her shoulder about her own identity, about her kind of like biracial nature, and they don't really get into that kind of stuff too deeply in the Next Generation episodes that we see. I mean, they kind of touch on it a little bit, but she's more just portrayed as this kind of character who's just always out for herself, right? And they kind of confirm that in this comic too. They say that, you know, Tasha's just, Cela, if there's one thing you can count on about Cela is that she's always thinking about herself first. But,
well, Eric.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Why don't we remind the fans what happened to Tasha Yar in the alternate frame?
Yeah, Jim gave us a little reminder earlier, but yeah, just to – yeah, go ahead.
Well, we go back to the slightly multi-universe episode, yesterday's Enterprise, back in Season 3, Episode 15. Where, due to a change in history, suddenly we go back and find the Enterprise dealing with Enterprise C coming through a rift. And we find that Enterprise C's sacrifice that allowed peace to occur with the Romulans. And because a crew member was killed in that ship during an incident, Tasha took that person's place because Guinan was now aboard the ship and said that she didn't belong there. So that she actually joined the Enterprise C, and being in the conflict there was capturing the Romulans and backdated herself back to the past of where she existed for Cela to be born.
And an interesting fact that's not canon at all. When back in the early days of Star Trek conventions, before we had the internet and we had awesome podcasts like this one and technical manuals and all this stuff going on, there was a fan theory kicking around at the time that because Tasha Yar, okay, the alternate Tasha Yar that goes back in time and gives birth to Cela, the alternate Tasha Yar had information on the Enterprise D and on the future Federation technology, and she volunteered to be the consort of this Romulan commandant in order for saving the lives of the people that survived on the Enterprise C. And that she gave the information to the Romulans to help them build the giant-ass Romulan warbirds that we see on TNG, because it was so far advanced above what the Romulans had used in the past. So that's a fan theory as to where the Romulans, you know, got that technology from, was from the future, was from the alternate future timeline of Tasha Yar from yesterday's Enterprise. There's a lot of timey-wimey stuff there, obviously.
Well, yeah. So I guess if I just kind of finish, so we're talking about kind of Sela and having a chip on her shoulder and the way that she kind of explores different things, and we should get into the comic here in a minute. But I guess the last thing that I wanted to say bit relative to what you guys were just saying was that the Tasha Yar story to me is one of the most tragic in all of Star Trek, because not only does she get a crappy death the first time that she gets killed off, but then the second time that she kind of gets, you know, you think she's going to get killed off, you think everything's cool because of this whole, like, Enterprise C, you know, she's going to go back, she's going to sacrifice herself, so that's like an honorable death. And then we find out, you know, later on in canon that no, actually she was captured, and no, she was actually forced to do the same sorts of terrible things that she actually grew up having to do in order to save other people's lives. And then eventually gets executed trying to escape with her daughter. So it just, yeah, to me, like, this character, Tasha Yar, can't get a break in the Star Trek universe, and I don't understand.
I'd love to shed a little light on some of that too.
Yeah,
if it's okay to do, because a lot of this is not how things were supposed to go at all, right? Is unfortunately, a lot of times this is what creative people run into in the business aspect of Hollywood, right? The whole idea of Sela originally was a Denise Crosby idea.
Yeah,
right? She was sitting around at home, and she was basically thinking about how much fun it was to do the Enterprise, yesterday's Enterprise episode. And so she actually pitched the idea, right, of Lieutenant Yar having a child, right? But it was not in this whole, you know, Romulan prison camp General Revo thing that ended up getting done, right? Basically, the child was with Lieutenant Castillo from yesterday's Enterprise, right? That was her idea. Right. And to her, she thought that was great, that made good sense. And so the idea was that child would be taken from them and raised by Romulans, right, to grow up to be a Romulan. And so she brought that idea to the producers, and they kind of kicked it around for a while, and they liked it. Right. But they said, we like your idea, but we just can't get sense of the fact that Lieutenant Yar got pregnant by Castillo for some reason. They just couldn't wrap their heads around it. And let me tell you, it's a very easy process. So they came up with this whole thing, you know, the Yar is captured. They didn't all die in the battle. The ship was captured, and she was, you know, taken by a Romulan general, that whole thing there. So it was really, her idea was kind of like hijacked, and they came up with this whole slightly darker, I think unnecessarily, you know, downbeat origin, really. So it's just always interesting, I think, to go back and say, what did the original person who came up with the idea have in mind? Right?
Makes me almost think about. Sorry, I was just going to say, it almost makes me think about that. This idea gave birth to the idea of the Nemesis movie, where Captain Picard's clone apparently was raised by Romulans. I wonder if that had a connection at all.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm still trying to forget that movie existed, but, you know, that's...
Stop it.
I'm still trying to scrub that one out of my retinas, but you know, it's just like, you know, and I think back in the day, this was a real problem that I think a lot of the cast, and folks in Next Gen had to deal with, you know. Gates McFadden as well. They did not treat women well on that show
during
that particular era, right? And it was very... very patriarchal, and they were very quick to dismiss people and kind of shut them down. I mean, that was one of the reasons that McFadden left for such a long time for season two, is because they were just, you know, kind of a-holes to work with. One member of the writing staff in particular, who will remain nameless for the time being, but I think most people know who we're talking about. But, you know, finally, cooler heads prevailed, and they brought her back. But it's just like, you know, I mean, this is very dismissive. I would be willing to bet that Denise Crosby got paid nothing for the creation of this character, and yet she's been in several episodes, has action figures produced of the character, and I'm betting they just hijacked
fan favorite thing. I'd say Sela, I bet if you were to ask about Romulans, people would say like Romulan commander and Sela. Like,
yeah, you know, and she's still, the character is still being used in comic
yes,
books. In my universe, Ms. Crosby ought to be getting some money for that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
totally,
because
you.
This is how things should work. But she kind of got the shaft. So I think at the very least, it's important to point out that she is the source of this because of her affection for the character and her desire to continue to contribute something to the Star Trek universe. So I wish we had her on as a guest is what I wish, because I'm sure she could really set us straight, you know, and give us the real dope. If there's any way we can ever land Ms. Crosby as a guest on this show, I'd love to do part two of this episode with her perspective included.
Uh-huh. Well, for the fans that are listening that might not be aware, I believe that Tasha Yar was raised on Takana 4, and she escaped rape gangs and forced drug usage because she tells Wesley that whole story on TNG. And she had a sister named Ishara, and they both escaped from Turkana 4, and then she ends up on the Enterprise. So that's her backstory. And then she ends up having Sela in a Romulan camp in the future in an alternate timeline. Yeah, I think I got that right. It's confusing.
Yeah. So,
yeah. But not so cool, because they're perpetuating that whole medieval, you know, I don't even want to say
yeah,
it, but that whole, you know, assault gang nonsense, which is just really,
right,
you know, it's a dude's idea of what, you know, a hardcore, you know, female character would have to endure. And it's really just oppressive and not good. So it's one of those things that I'd like to think that we can maybe, you know, evolve beyond. But they ended up repeating the same backstory for a daughter, you know, essentially, or making the same character go through the same thing twice. It's just like not good, guys, not good at all.
Yeah, Sela had the same basic upbringing as Tasha did.
Well, no. I think Sela was raised by the general. Like, she wasn't raised in a one of those type situations. When we were comparing, when I was saying that Tasha got the shaft, it's because both regular universe Tasha and yesterday's Enterprise Tasha both got the shaft in terms of how they died, right? Her
exactly.
The mom is the one that died, and she died because she was in this camp with her daughter, and then once she died, Sela, the daughter, was raised by the general. So Sela was like, from 4 years on, was probably raised a little bit more poshly. We get a little bit of that backstory in the comic. Should we talk about the comic?
Let's do
sure.
it.
Sure. Yep.
All right, so this comic is awesome. So this is an annual, so I think it's a little bit longer. I didn't count pages, but it feels a little bit thicker to me. It was $5.99 on the cover. And this comic picks up at the end of the Day of Blood kind of crossover event that we had that happened in a whole bunch of the comics. And you don't really need to know anything about that to know, you know, where this story picks up. But the one thing, there's kind of a splash page that just sort of connects you to the Day of Blood thing, which we could talk about if we want to. But I think the most interesting part of the comic starts on the second page, which is where you kind of get the Sela backstory. So they just kind of remind you who she is, where she's been. At this point in her career, she has kind of failed a couple of times in the eyes of the Romulan government, and even in the eyes of the Tal Shiar, she's been kind of a failure. And so she's trying to kind of look for ways to, you know, raise her cred among her Romulan counterparts. And in the first few pages here, we get some really cool, like, action scenes where she's attacked by some Klingons, and she does some pretty sweet moves here and there to take them out. But more importantly is after the fight happens, she hooks up with somebody who has some knowledge of a device that allows somebody to travel through time, but travel through time in such a way as they're sort of connected to themselves from another time frame. So I get the idea that, like, you can only travel within your own lifetime, I think, maybe. But the thing that was the most interesting to me about this was they mentioned this Klingon, Korath. And I was like, oh, Korath, that sounds super familiar. And then later on in the comic, they sort of explained who he is, but I looked him up right away. And this is the same Klingon dude that had the time travel device in Voyager's Endgame episode that future Janeway was trying to, that used to like go back and talk to other Janeway. So I thought that was really cool to have kind of a Voyager connection within this comic, I will say. Sela gets control of this device, and without kind of revealing all the things that happen afterward, I think what's important that I want to talk about is that she goes to her superiors. She goes to the governor of the of where they are, the prefect, and she's like, okay, in this Day of Blood comic series, I got all this information from the Klingons about all this important military stuff. Here it all is. What do you think now? And what she's kind of expecting is that she's expecting some kind of redemption. She's expecting, I think, the Romulan government to say, nice work. Good job. We no longer think that you're, you know, a failure because of all the things that you've not done in the past. And in fact, she hands it all over to him, and that is not at all the reaction. So I would love to talk more about like his reaction and just kind of what everybody thought about that. There's a time jump here. There's some timey-wiminess. There's some timey-wiminess that allows Sela to actually talk to a version of Tasha Yar. I don't want to give too many details. I'll see what you guys want to talk about. But I thought that was super cool because this is like the, like David was talking about, Nemesis, which I know Paul likes to forget. But the concept of that movie was to have this character that you could mirror Picard against. And I think that if you've got a good mirror, you know, for two people in this series, you got Sela and you've got Tasha. And if you can kind of put them face to face and put them in the same situation and have them have to work either together or against one another, that makes for some really interesting stories. The one thing that I didn't like about this comic is kind of like before the end, but there's kind of a, well, it was all just amnesia. Like, you can't remember some things. And if there's one thing that kind of turns me off in stories, it's just mention of the word amnesia.
Sorry, it was all a dream.
Or it was all a dream or whatever. Nonsense. Like, any of that kind of stuff just, like, shuts me down, and I just lose interest very quickly. So I want to know more about what you guys thought about that, too. And then, as Jim was saying, this comic kind of retells the story a little bit of how Sela goes from her mother to the general. Her mother's actually shown escaping. And so I thought this was cool. It's like a 2 or 3 page splash where they show graphically the story that we already knew from Next Generation. So I really liked that. I thought that was cool. And the comic ends with a the end, but it's clear that it continues on in the Defiant comic because now she's going to go and she's going to try and find the Defiant and that kind of stuff. But she does some, I think, some deeper introspection at the end here. There's like in the last couple pages, she even sheds a tear and she starts talking about, you know, kind of keeping the secret that her mother was human. And what does that mean in terms of her own identity? And that's what I meant kind of at the beginning of the conversation when I started talking about like her biracial nature and the fact that they haven't really explored that too much. And I think this comic is kind of starting to get into that, which is really interesting to me.
So you mentioned the Defiant. Are you talking about the Deep Space Nine Defiant or the TOS?
The Deep Space Nine Defiant. Yeah. Yeah. This is all set in, during like the Sela time frame, so I don't know when exactly this comic is set, but yeah.
I thought for some reason Sela went through like some sort of portal. I thought I heard something like alternate universe or something. So I was like,
oh, she goes in this comic. She goes essentially back in time. I don't want to give too much away, but there's a back in time timiness. Yeah.
Okay, so it's not the Defiant TOS. It's actually
no.
It's, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, she's I got this. Toss in real quickly. It's just like, I know that all of our listeners don't necessarily read the comics, right? But if you have not, and you have been curious about what IDW has been doing, they've been doing a lot in the last couple of years, right? And I have to say that this particular issue of Defiant, that you do not need to have been, you know, ongoing reading all the different issues to appreciate this. I think Defiant's up to something like, I don't know, a dozen issues right now, I think. But this annual is outstanding. And it is, as Eric says, it's got a lot of depth in it. It's extremely well done. It's good storytelling. It's very true to the character. I had to laugh just because the scene that Eric was describing where she goes in and hands over the, you know, time displacement, you know, equipment to the Romulan prefect, right? And she's expecting to be praised and gets treated like shit, right? It's basically, a lot like when Denise Crosby brought the whole idea to Paramount, right?
Oh,
and she, isn't this a great idea? Don't you think it would be really cool to do it? And they're like, no, this is ours now, and fuck you. It's like basically it's kind of the same dynamic. It's like, thanks, patriarchy, a-hole.
Yuck.
So it's a lot. I was just like, kind of found that to be bitterly familiar on there. But it's really, really good. I think we should be able to talk about it without giving away too much. I agree. But there is a wonderful folks who look back on like classic animated series episodes like Yesteryear, where characters get to enact with like, you know, younger versions of themselves or future versions of themselves or alternate versions there. But to be able to go back and perhaps interact with your other family members in an earlier period of their history before you were on the scene, an alternate environment, it's pretty interesting and compelling. And everyone feels very true to character, I think, in this, but especially Sela, right? Sela is like very... she's very Machiavellian, right? Ruthless, especially when she finally gets the time displacement equipment. She has no problem with just annihilating the person she got it from, you know? It's like, does anyone know about this besides you? Which is never a good thing to answer yes to.
Never answer yes.
If you've ever seen a movie in your life, I would be like, yes, everyone knows. But if you say no, you're pretty much going to get killed. But it's a good old trope. But she's great. She's ruthless, and she's Cecilia we know and love. And the dialogue really captures that, right? So a huge shout-out to Christopher Cantwell, who's done a ton of Star Trek for IDW. But he really gets the tone of it right. We get to see Martok in this particular issue, which is lovely as well. There's a lot of Martok fans on the show. And it's very cool, and it ends on a really good note that makes you want more of Sela and shows that, like, this character can be growing and doing and wanting to reinvent themselves, right, and become someone else, very much like, you know, I would see that she's kind of a good counterpoint to when we talk about characters like Emperor Giorgio, right, who went down a really dark path, but maybe are trying to reinvent themselves and do something different with their lives. And I kind of think Sela comes across that same way. So terrific issue. And I'm really excited that Eric brought this into the light.
Jim, or whoever.
Oh my God, shit in the bag and punch it. I read the wrong issue. All this stuff that you guys are talking about was not in the issue that I read. I read the next issue.
Oh no!
I read the issue after this one. Oh yeah. My God,
Jim, this is the one that has the big word annual on the cover.
Yeah.
I bought it on Kindle, and I just went to the Kindle and bought the newest issue and read it, and it's not this one. I'm like, the one I read had Sela in it, but not doing the stuff you guys are talking about. Uh-oh.
Yeah, Sela's been in the Defiant arc a little bit. She's come and gone. I mean, this is definitely not her first appearance, for sure. But I think this is her, best appearance, right? But she's had, she's been on the cover before. She's been on the cover holding, like, a laser rifle on an issue, right? I mean, she's been featured. I think we're going to get... I wouldn't surprise me at all that IDW does this, at least a short, four-issue series that's all Sela, because I think people dig it, right? And I just, you know, if it were me, if I was IDW, I would be holding out an olive branch to Denise Crosby and say, how about you write an issue, right? What would you really like to see going on here, right? And team up and really involve her, I think would be a really nice move, you know, and a real class act. And who knows the character better than her? I would say no.
Well, so, I got to tell you, the issue that I read, she gets into it with Worf, which I thought was great.
Well,
so,
that'd be fun.
You know, that was fun.
Well,
you know, but
well,
yeah,
I'm
going to have to go back and read this issue that you guys are talking about now and read the right one.
Yeah.
it sucks to get old.
Eric.
Yeah.
You mentioned to me, and I kind of between the lines, but when she's talking to the gentleman and mentions Rator 3 and the prison astronomers, I'm wondering if that doesn't lead to the supernova of the Romulan Empire.
Well, ooh, you know, that
that's not far. That's not far down the line, because we're dealing with just before Picard becomes admiral.
Well, I will tell you that I am not, as you guys know, I'm not like a big computer gamer, but from what I understand, in the Star Trek Online world, Sela is like...
It does mention it.
Yeah, it's like a pretty major character, and she like becomes pre-consul at some point, and there's something about the...
I started looking it up, and it is that planet is mentioned on Star Trek Online. There's some other tie-ins where the Romulans were trying to convince the Enterprise to go to that planet, so I'm not sure exactly how that planet's tied in.
Mm-hmm.
But when they say prison astronomers, makes me wonder if that might not be a little future tie-in to that.
Yeah, I can see that.
Picard.
Yeah, totally.
I could see it. But to answer Paul's question, yes, the Defiant is 12 issues plus the annual, and then Star Trek is to their 17th issue, not counting the prelude to the Day of Blood.
And there's also
there's
also Echoes, which I've been reading, which the motion picture mirror universe, and then there's the one with
I'm just talking about the Day of Blood series, and the Day of Blood series is based on Star Trek, which is the comic book Star Trek, and Star Trek Defiant, along with the free comic book issue of Day of Blood.
Yeah, IDW's got a lot of Star Trek going on right now. A lot of Star Trek.
Huh. So I guess just to, I mean, unless you guys have more you want to say about Tasha, I'll just say that I keep saying Tasha, Sela, because I see her face and I want to say Tasha about Sela. I'll just wrap it up by saying I think that she is a character that has a lot of unexplored complexity, and I'm just so thrilled that IDW is putting some time in this, and I completely agree with you, Paul. Let's get Denise Crosby on board, man. It would be so cool to have her ideas about this character come to fruition in a comic. I'd be so excited.
Let's depict, you know, what happened to Castillo, right? Let's see.
Yeah.
Let's get a story about that. Let's find out what that time period was like, you know, beforehand. I'd love her to be able to handle that. It's just, okay, you know, a lot of times it's like that can be the golden environment, right? It's like, okay, so the TV, it's like people talk about like Star Trek Legacy, wanting that to be a TV series, right? Doesn't seem like it's happening right now, right? But we've got comics, right, that you can still tell these stories. You can still mine that content, and you can do some really good stuff. Comics are a great format to continue keeping these stories alive, and you know, they're just as legit. So I like to see them get their due.
Yeah. Well, this issue also talked about something that I'd be curious to see a little bit more, being part of the USS April.
Yeah.
And who the officers were on that ship.
Well, Picard is on the USS April. Yar was on the McMillan. But yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool.
But you've also got Riker on there, and rather interesting their conversation when the past view took place.
Hmm. Yeah, they do such a good job.
Enterprise.
They just do such a good job in the comics of making sure that they touch all these little bits of the television canon and the movie canon that we've seen. It's just so cool. They're like little threads that go and connect to all these other things that we already know. And when you start filling in details like that, that's when you get really cool universe building happening. And I'm so excited that there's enough Star Trek stuff now, enough alpha canon, like been on the screen Star Trek, that we can build really complex stories out of it.
So
yes, I really love what IDW does with this stuff.
Have they been putting?
David.
Sorry, have they been putting a lot of the stuff that they put in the comics, like tidbits in the TV series, like you see bits and pieces of like little lore here and there.
There's been little crossover things here and there. Like, for example, there was a comic that came out that was a countdown comic before the Picard series came out that gave you a whole bunch of backstory, so that you actually had more detail going into watching Picard. So they're doing more of that. There's still a lot of it that just goes and makes its own kind of stories on the side, like this Echoes series that Jim was talking about, which explores kind of some Mirror Universe TOS characters. I'm having fun reading that. But then they explore like other fun ideas. Like there's a Star Trek Academy one right now, or Starfleet Academy, which I think is written for maybe like younger readers, and it's all about Picard when he was in Starfleet Academy. So that's kind of fun. There's a whole bunch of different titles going on.
So
we are going to have to get our good friend J.K. Woodard back on the podcast again, because we've had him on a couple of times, and basically what he told us is that the comics are canon adjacent, and a lot of times when they write the episodes, this was back, we had him back on during Discovery, and he was telling us that a lot of the stories, they just don't have the time to write when they sit down to come up with an idea for an episode. There's a lot that they have to cut out of it, and a lot of times the comic book writers will get their hands on the stuff that didn't have time to make it into the show, and they will use that information for comic books. In particular, The Light of Kaelas was the one we talked to him about, and that whole storyline with Pike and you know, the time crystals, we saw a little bit on Discovery, but in the comic book, they really went a lot more into the whole Pike-Laurel relationship and a lot of the things that we didn't see on the show that they couldn't fit in, and that's how he described it, canon adjacent.
Interesting. So did they mention what Sheila's last name was? I'm assuming it wasn't Yar.
I'm not sure that Romulans have last names. I think that they're all just kind of known by one name, yeah. It's like T'Pol, T'Rul. Yeah, I just mentioned at least one Vulcan, sorry. But
Vulcan,
I think all the Romulans I know are like
they'll get like, usually it's like you get, they get identified by like their government rank, right? Like
proconsul, yeah.
Kondar or whatever,
totally.
Right? You know,
so
it's more that.
Okay, cool. Well, these comic books sound really fun. I might have to get into them now.
I'm going to have to go read this one that these guys are talking about because it sounds great.
It's very good. I really read it. You know, a lot of times, too, it's just like this is, you know, it's a minor criticism of mine, but just sometimes, you know, especially with adaptations of other media, right, sometimes these just bang these things out, and the art's not so great, right? I mean, it's really not sometimes. I'm sorry, but it's just sometimes it's a little, you know, perfunctory, I would just call it. The art in here and the character designs are really nice. I mean, it's got a great look to it. The very, very dynamic movement, really good use of the frame. Really, really well done. I would easily give the art in the annual an A. I think it's really well done with a lot of nice detail. It just feels like it was done with a lot of care and affection. So it really comes through. And you will not be disappointed is what I would say. It's good work from all comers.
Cool. Well, I got one last question for all of you.
At all?
Say again?
Or does J.K. Woodard do any of the artwork in this one, Eric?
I don't think
Ramon
he's done
Rosales.
Anything. No, I'm pretty, I think the last thing I think J.K. Woodard did for these was the Terra Incognita series, if I remember right, or maybe one of those other Mirror Universe ones, but yeah, we haven't seen him for a while, but yeah, Ramon Rosanas is doing a fantastic job, and they've actually had several books that they've put out already too in this, like among the Star Trek comics, so we've gotten to see a lot of their work already, and I dig it. I'm with Paul, man. The likenesses are great, and I love when motion happens, the way this artist portrays motion, just I feel it, like you can tell that it's happening, right? I think that's so cool.
Yeah, and Sela's like big martial arts action in here too. She definitely isn't just sitting around in the shadows, conspiring. She will occasionally need to kick ass.
Yep.
Yes. Yes, she will.
So I got one last question for all of you before we wrap up the whole Fila conversation. So all of you guys who are reading the comic books, you mentioned that the Defiant series, how many are actually in, how many comic books are actually in the series?
Charles, take it away.
13?
Okay, David. We're going to, there are...
Just the Defiant title, I think. Not the, don't count all the other ones.
No, if you do the series... You have to do Star Trek and Defiant because they do Star Trek, then Star Trek Defiant. Star Trek Defiant. I think about book 12 of Star Trek. And Defiant took it
Defiant had
through.
12. They just published issue 12 a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 12 plus probably another five
Star
or six.
Trek,
yeah.
Yeah.
Star Trek published their 17th book.
Yeah. So in this story, I guess what he's saying is there's probably something like 17 issues altogether, and it spans at least two series.
Wow.
But David, you can pick them up on Kindle for $1.79 each.
I don't have Kindle, but.
That's
and
right,
I think IDW does, like, you know, they publish volumes as well, right? I mean,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure
yeah,
now.
Yeah.
And when you get
yeah.
to a round number like 12, which they just did, that's probably an indication that they'll have a you know, compendium pretty
yeah,
soon.
Yeah, in fact, didn't they just put out the graphic novel of that, the Cisco run? Was it called Godspell or God
yeah.
something?
Godspell.
Not Godspell, yeah. but you know what I'm saying.
I do, man. Another musical.
Another musical. I can't stop.
No. But yeah, they're just, you know, I think they, you know, I just, it's nice that we're paying attention to this stuff and supporting it because they really, I think they really value the frickin' property, right? And they don't do a cheap job on it. I think that they actually care and want to really do a good job. And they treat this as like the crown jewels and they don't mess around and they really apply a lot of creativity to corners of the franchise that might otherwise get overlooked. So I think this is a really amazingly cool idea for a episode, Big E. Good work for you, man.
Thanks, man.
All right, guys. So
the Cisco part you mentioned actually is part of the Star Trek comic. That's where it starts.
Yeah.
Well, guys, are you ready for some Star Trek birthdays?
Woo!
Let's do it.
That was not a Klingon song.
Now, we've got a lot of really, really good birthdays, and I tried to spread them out and give everybody their equal opportunity here, so hopefully I did a good enough job. And we always start off our birthdays by remembering those members of our Star Trek family who, sadly enough, are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric.
Jim, this week our first remembrance goes out to William Dennis Hunt. William Dennis Hunt is the actor who portrayed the Klingon Haraga in the Star Trek Deep Space Nine 4th season episode, The Way of the Warrior. William Dennis Hunt also had several television credits on all sorts of different series from the 80s and 90s. His first film role was Emperor Wang in the perverted, I guess I would say, adult film Flesh Gordon.
Wang. That's Emperor Wang.
And then I guess later appeared in a sequel called Flesh Gordon Meets the Cosmic Cheerleaders, which sounds amazing. I kind of feel like I want to watch that now.
Gordon's a guy?
Yeah. So, William Dennis Hunt, thank you for Star Trek, and thank you for sharing your Flesh Gordon with us. We appreciate it. Also, happy birthday to John Hancock. He's the actor who played Vice Admiral Hayden in the Next Generation 3rd and 4th season episodes The Defector and The Wounded. I'll say right off the bat, I think he's one of the good ones. He doesn't get too much screen time, but we don't see him do anything stupid, so that's good. He, John Hancock, started working as an actor late in the 60s. Has a couple of film credits, including Airplane 2 on his resume, which is kind of cool. He was also in 10 with Denise Crosby. And crossed over in the Roots Next Generations miniseries with a couple of people as well. So John Hancock would have had a birthday here just March 4th. And unfortunately, we lost him at the young age of 51 years old. So died way too early back in 1992. Happy birthday, John Hancock. Happy birthday as well to Joy Garrett, the actress and vocalist who played Annie in the Next Generation 6th season episode, A Fistful of Datas. Joy Garrett was better known for her recurring role as Jo Johnson on the soap opera Days of Our Lives from 1993. And during that time, she won some awards, some Soap Opera Digest Awards, Outstanding Actress Awards for daytime television. So, you know, well-respected in that industry. Between 83 and 85, she was also on The Young and the Restless, another daytime television series. And she has a couple other television shows and movie credits to her name along the way. So Joy Garrett, her birthday, March 2nd, 1945. We lost her also way too early at the young age of 47 years old in 1993. Happy birthday, Joy Garrett. We miss you. Happy birthday as well to Anne Haney. She's the actress who portrayed the role of Rashawn Uxbridge in the Next Generation 3rd season episode, The Survivors, and Els Renora in the DS9 first season episode, Dax. You, of course, remember those both those characters, I think. But Anne Haney is really another giant of both stage and screen. She has many achievements, and what's interesting about her career is that her achievements didn't really start until her mid-40s. After she raised her family and buried her first husband, then she kind of got this idea of, well, maybe it'd be a good idea to act, and she did. And she was an instant hit, appeared all the time on Mama's Family in the late 80s, and then did a whole bunch of guest stars throughout the 80s and early 90s. Tons of feature film credits, even in America, like Mrs. Doubtfire and The American President, Liar Liar. You've seen all these movies. So Anne Haney, what a great actress. I love her portrayal, especially of Rashawn Uxbridge in that TNG third season episode. What a great character, and kind of dealing with that husband that she doesn't know is actually a omnipotent alien. I mean, it happens, you know. Anne Haney would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday. Happy birthday as well to Brad Weston. Brad Weston is the stage name for Donald Wayne Belts, who was the actor who played Ed Apple in the TOS first season episode, The Devil in the Dark, one of my top five TOS episodes of all time. So good. Weston was a World War II vet, had kind of an interesting transference from military service into education, into acting, was really known for his work on a lot of the old westerns like The Rifleman and Gunsmoke back in the day. 63 different movies or something like that he appeared in. There's a whole bunch of them. At any rate, he made his final screen appearance in the film The Doors, and you'll remember that one from 1991 with Val Kilmer. So Brad Weston would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday to him. Happy birthday as well to a well-known actor, Dean Stockwell, the award-winning actor who portrayed Gratt in the Enterprise first season episode, Detain. You know Dean Stockwell probably for his four-time Emmy award-winning nominated role as Rear Admiral Albert Al Calavici in Quantum Leap from 89 through 93, right? where he co-starred with Scott Bakula from that Enterprise series. And actually, his involvement in that episode of Enterprise was all because of that connection with Scott Bakula. They actually wanted to get the team back together, so to speak. So that's how Dean Stockwell got that part. They wrote it for him, essentially. He's crossed over with everybody. I mean, he did stuff with Jeffrey Hunter, and he's done other stuff with Patrick Stewart back in the day. But I will say the other thing that he's probably well known for are his two David Lynch films that he did. He was, of course, in 1984's Dune, and he was also in 1986's Blue Velvet. Two fantastic movies in their own right, I guess.
So good.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I would say Blue Velvet is fantastic. I'd say 84's Dune is like, it's good and you should see it once. So happy birthday to Dean Stockwell. What an actor and a really cool guy. He was also in Battlestar Galactica. Like, there's so many cool things that he's done in his life. So happy birthday. And we just lost him a few years ago. We lost him in 2021 at the ripe old age of 85 years old. Happy birthday, Dean. Happy birthday as well to David Spielberg, the actor who portrayed Commander Calvin Hutchinson in the TNG six-season episode Starship Mine. He was also on Sequest DSV, a show that I know Jim likes quite a bit. Later in his career, Spielberg mostly starred in television guest roles. So if you can name it from the 90s and the late 80s, he was probably in an episode of it all over the place. He was also in a movie with Steve McQueen, The Hunter. Is that a good one? I haven't seen that one. Do you know that one, Paul?
It's okay. It's not my favorite Steve McQueen movie. It's all right.
Okay. I guess that movie, did that movie have LeVar Burton in it too? I don't know. That sounds very confusing to me. Maybe not. But I know that he made three appearances on the 1980 series Highway to Heaven, which was something that my mom watched all the time. So David Spielberg, happy birthday, and lots of love and remembrances going out to you. And last but not least, a long list of remembrances today, but we end with a banger. We are saying happy birthday this week to James Jimmy Montgomery Doohan. That guy, yeah, portrayed Montgomery Scotty Scott in the TOS series and the first seven Star Trek movies. Also appeared in Next Generation's episode Relics. And, of course, in the archive footage used in Deep Space Nine's episode Trials and Tribulations, which kind of is a nice little extra on everybody's resume. He worked as Scotty. His work as Scotty ranged over a 29-year period. I think that is so cool. You think about just how much time he spent playing that character. He was born in 1920, and I think a lot of people know already about his amazing military service. He served during the Second World War, was eventually promoted to a command post officer, a captain's rank. There are some amazing stories about his actual service that are out there, and I think you should go out and read them. I don't want to go into them too deeply here just for time's sake, but suffice to say, the man lost fingers in the service of his country, and I think everybody appreciated his efforts. One cool thing that I found while kind of researching him this time around, which I hadn't read before, was that for the first season, James Doohan's contract allowed him to appear in 5 episodes out of 13 for a salary of $850 per episode. So if you wanted to know how much people were making back in the day on Star Trek, at least James Doohan was making $850 an episode. So you can do your conversions and figure out what that adds up to. Anyway, also a very skilled voice actor, voiced things on the animated series. Characters including like Eric's was voiced by him. He could do all sorts of different voices. He actually invented Klingonese. I'm pretty sure that he helped invent the Vulcans language too, if I remember correctly. So there's no end to the touch that this man had on Star Trek, on service to his country and on all aspects of his life. So happy birthday and just lots and lots of love going out to James Doohan. We lost him back in 2005. And that does it, you guys, for our long list of remembrances this week, but I thought it was important to cover everybody. So, Charles, take it away for the list of the living, I'll say.
Oh, thank you, Eric. Let's start off the happy birthday to Madeline Wise, actress who played Yvette Picard in the second season of Star Trek Picard. Happy birthday to Samantha Eggar, Academy Award nominated British actor who played Marie Picard in Star Trek Next Generation 4-season episode, Family. Happy birthday to Joanne Miles, actress who played Perrin in Star Trek Next Generation 3rd-season episode, Sarek, and 5th-season episode, Unification 1. Happy birthday to Heidi Swedberg, actress from Honolulu, Hawaii, who played Rikilin in Star Trek Deep Space Nine's second season episode, Profit and Loss. Happy birthday to Steven Weber from Queens, New York, actress who played Colonel Day in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, second season episode, The Siege. And a couple of big hitters here. Happy birthday to Jonathan Del Arco, Uruguayan-born actress who played Hugh in Star Trek Next Generation, fifth and seventh season episodes, Ibor, Descendant, Part 2. He reprised the role in Star Trek Picard's first season episode, The End is the Beginning, Impossible Box, and The Nepenthe. And finally on my list, a very big happy birthday, Gates McFadden, who portrayed Beverly Crusher in most of the first and third through seventh seasons of Next Generation and the four movies and the third season of Star Trek Picard. McFadden also directed TNG's seventh season episode Genesis and choreographed the dance routines in the fourth season episode of Data's Day, where she teaches Data to dance. Very interesting person to hear on stage. She's definitely very opinionated to her beliefs. And
amen.
Especially interesting to hear her and Denise Crosby start going at it. I saw them in a Star Trek reunion panel for, I think it was the 30th of the most recent anniversary of Next Generation. And definitely you could tell those two women are very strong-headed, very opinionated, but worthy of both of their statuses. So I'll pass my list on to Paul. And see.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it, man. All right. A bunch of folks having birthdays this week. We got to get rocking and rolling here. We don't want to leave anybody in our wake. First of all, happy birthday goes out to Tracy Lee Coco, actress, model, and stuntwoman who has been on Star Trek The Next Generation and other arms of the franchise more than I can say as a character named Lieutenant J. Okay, I am here to tell you, and you're like, who are you talking about, Paul? We don't even know. But if you think back to Next Generation, you see a very intense-looking young woman, typically at the helm or navigator station with super teased-up 80s hair, right, cut short. That's Lieutenant J, and she's been in over 100 Star Trek episodes and at least three features, okay? She's always on all the time, and she's ubiquitous. So she's been on Deep Space Nine. She's been on Voyager and full makeup, but she's been, and she's a convention fixture as well. She got started in Gross Anatomy, a picture back in the late 80s with Matthew Modine, and she was on Baywatch, and she's never really stopped working. So, but she's been in a ton of Star Trek. Very seldom gets the dialogue, you know, she should deserve, but she's great.
And definitely. She's been on Trek Talking as well.
No,
yes,
way, that's
has.
Great. No, sorry to miss that one. Yeah, she's awesome. So happy birthday, my friend. Great to be able to know you're part of our universe. Happy birthday all goes out to Graham Parkhurst, who played Lieutenant Deaver, I can't remember, in the Strange New Worlds first season episode Spock Amok. Happy birthday to Ron Fassler, going back to Voyager's sixth season, who played Morin in the episode Dragon's Teeth. Big fan of this guy coming up next here, actor James B. Sicking. Okay, been an actor forever who played Captain Lawrence Stiles in Star Trek III Search for Spock. We're getting a lot of attention this week because it's getting another anniversary release on 4K and Blu-ray. So coming up again, but James Sicking has been a presence ever since a show that a lot of folks, I hope, paid attention to and watched called Hill Street Blues back in the day.
Yeah.
He was he was kind of like the leader of the SWAT patrol on that particular show, a real hardcore military guy. Very often plays military types. He was in The Pelican Brief and in a really great science fiction picture with Sean Connery. I don't know if you guys know Outland.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I absolutely know that.
terrific picture. It's basically high noon and a mining colony. But it's really, really great, directed by Peter Hyams, who's worked with James Sicking a lot. I think they're good buddies. But if you've not seen Outland, I really recommend it, and it's a great chance to see James Sicking doing his thing. And he's always very convincing and a little intimidating on camera, I got to say. He's a great dude, but really indelible in Star Trek III, Search for Spock. He's just terrific, you know, radiating all that calm, and you just know it's not
going
to go well.
Be fine.
Great. So love the guy. Really, really cool. Happy birthday to Donna Murphy, a Tony Award-winning stage, film, and television actress who played the character of Anish in the wonderful film Star Trek Insurrection. Very, very cool there. Oh, I gotta stop for a minute because I'm verklempt that I get this guy. I can't believe I'm able to... going to have a stroke. I can't believe I get to say happy birthday to the great Fred Williamson, man. The great Fred Williamson, a former professional football player who played, we're acknowledging from the original series, third season episode, The Cloudminders, which I'm a big fan of. He played Anka in that episode, but this cat is a legend, okay? Mm-hmm. Fred Williamson is amazing. He was basically, crowned the godfather of Harlem in the era of the blaxploitation pictures, right? Because he was in Black Caesar way back then from Larry Cohen, who did a bunch of these pictures, all right? But used to be in the Oakland Raiders and Kansas City Chiefs. He was a football star, rose to prominence when those blaxploitation picks started happening in the early 70s. He was a little recurring love interest on a great groundbreaking TV series called Julia that is definitely cool. And then he's always been just somebody who's got a great cult following. As well, really great dude who I remember most recently seeing in the awesome From Dusk Till Dawn, which was really great. And he's been on Starsky and Hutch. And I think I first remember seeing this guy in the original Robert Altman MASH, right? I think that was where I first saw him playing a character. I will not speak aloud here, but really a legend. If I ever ran into, assuming he drinks, if I ever ran into Fred Williamson in a bar, I'd feel compelled to buy that guy a drink because he's just awesome with a capital R. So, and part of the Star Trek universe as well. How cool is that? Fred Williamson, take a bow, my friend. Take a bow. Happy birthday to the lovely and luminous Barbara Luna, okay, who we go back, who was one of our first glimpses into the Mirror Universe, right? On the original series, second season episode, Mirror, Mirror, she played Marlena Moreau, a.k.a. the Captain's Woman, as her, as well as her Prime Universe counterpart in Mirror, Mirror, but really heart-stopping and breathtaking person, and still very much a wonderful figure that is part of the Hollywood scene. So really, really cool to be able to say happy birthday to you. I hope you're having a lovely celebration on your birthday week, birthday month. Milk it. Next up, thrilled to be able to wish a happy birthday to the grandson of the great legendary Gregory Peck. We are talking, of course, about actor Ethan Peck, who ever since the second season of Discovery and a couple of Short Treks has now laid claim and owns the character of Mr. Spock on Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Ethan Peck, we salute you. You were very open about the fact that when you were first taking on this role, you were finding your way and you were exploring it and trying to figure out a way to make the character your own and not following in slavish canon footsteps to the work of Leonard Nimoy, but finding your own path, which I think is commendable. And I think you've really done a remarkable job of making this character indelibly your work. Is a wonderful companion piece to what came before. So I cannot tell you how excited I am to see season 3 of Strange New Worlds, because he's part of just such a great ensemble cast. But every season it seems that Ethan Peck gets a little bit more and gets to explore more of that character, and he's willing to go dark. So super excited to see what he does next. Happy birthday, brother. We're big fans of you on this show. It would be really cool, Ethan Peck, if you came and were a guest on the show. for us and we could talk to you.
Do it, do it.
We would treat you like a king, brother. So I think that would be a wonderful time. So if you're out there, or if Mr. Peck's representation is listening, let's get you on this show. And you've got some Trexperts here who would love to spend time with you and pick your brain. Finally, for me, a very happy birthday goes out to, I think, what must be considered a Star Trek luminary from Enterprise. We, of course, are talking about the phenomenally lovely and very talented Jolene Blaylock, who we are honoring for her role as Vulcan Science Officer T'Pol on Enterprise. She also played T'Pol's second foremother, a.k.a. great-grandmother, T'Mir, in the Enterprise episode Carbon Creek that we've talked a lot about on this show. Now, Jolene Blaylock is still with us, but she has made it pretty clear that she has, for the time being, retired from acting. And has, I know she's got three kids that she's busy raising in her marriage. So that takes a lot of focus, and she's made the decision to not just be T'Pol, but to take a little break. And let's hope it is a break and she's not retired permanently, because I know a lot of times you hear folks in the community speculate, when would it be possible to have the T'Pol character come back? I mean, there's a lot of, I think, you know, folks rediscovering the worth that is Enterprise, right? We talk about that with Scott Bakula a lot. I think under the right circumstances, getting a little bit of a mini Enterprise reunion together with Jolene Blaylock leading the charge would be something that should not be ruled out. I would love to see that. And I think many of your fans would as well, Jolene. So happy birthday. And you've made some great contributions to the Star Trek universe in that role. So we salute you, friend. And I'm going to take my bow and pass the birthday cake over to Uncle Jim.
Well, speaking of retirement, let's not forget the great Elizabeth Dennehy, who retired from acting and then reappeared as Admiral. Admiral, let's not forget, excuse me, on Star Trek Picard, Admiral Shelby. So it's possible to come out of retirement, and Jolene could do it very easily. Also, I wanted to say that as a kid, I remember watching a show on Saturday morning, a cheesy show, but I watched it, called Jason of Star Command. And who was the engineer on Jason of Star Command? James Doohan himself. So, and if I remember correctly, there was a weird-looking Borg character that was the bad guy on that show. I'm going way back here, so yeah. Anyways, Jason of Star Command. So I've got three birthdays left, and they are all Klingons. How did that happen? So we're going to start off by saying kapla, kapla to Michelle C. Bonilla, the actress who played Buka in Star Trek Enterprise first season episode, Sleeping Dogs, an excellent, excellent episode. I think one of my favorites of Star Trek Enterprise. We also want to say happy birthday and kapla. And we're glad that he escaped the walls of Stovacor. To J.T. Cullum, who played Toral in Star Trek The Next Generation's fourth and fifth season episodes, Redemption Part 1 and Redemption Part 2.
Duras Patak.
Duras. He was the bastard son of Duras that they found in a harlot's bedchambers, according to Gowron. His life was given to Worf, and Worf spared him, and he came back to haunt him on Deep Space Nine. And I bet he wished he had killed him when he had the chance. So happy birthday to J.D. Cullum. And speaking of Duras and the House of Duras and the Duras sisters, we saved the best for last. This guy definitely ran into Feklar, I would say, when he got to Stovacor. They didn't sing songs for him or do a Klingon death roar for him. We want to say kapla to Patrick Mastet, the actor, director, writer, and producer who played Duras in Star Trek The Next Generation, third and fourth season episodes, Sins of the Father and Reunion. And what's funny is that of Duras, and you think that he was around for a while. because he's one of those enduring characters that sticks in your brain. But he was only in two episodes, which
and
is weird.
Let's be honest, it's mostly us remembering how Gowron says his name. It's not necessarily we remember Turas, we remember Gowron saying Turas.
Yeah. Because the character is such an integral part of Worf's journey, and Duras pretty much sets Worf on his path, and he seems like he's there a lot more than he really is, but it's only twice, but it's very memorable.
Well, let's keep his name alive, right? The next time I have to leave my name at like a hostess station for a restaurant reservation and they call your name out, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be leaving the name of Duras, right? Just
Duras.
So I can hear it, yeah, and then I can correct the pronunciation. It's Duras.
I love it.
It's the way Gowron says it with his white eye, you know?
That's right.
Pretty much what
in the back of his throat, Picard.
Yes, it was Gowron that makes us remember. Sarah.
Now try saying Lursa like that.
She's the cute one. All right, guys, so that wraps up our Star Trek birthdays, and now we're going to move on, and we're going to do a little bit of Star Trek news.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required.
Specify parameters.
Transfer of data is complete.
Blank alert. Blank alert.
So before we get started, we've been talking about this 40th anniversary steel box edition of Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. You guys may have remembered that we had Savick herself, Robin Curtis, on this podcast not too long ago, and boy, was she an awesome guest. If you missed that show, you want to go to trektalkin.com, find it, and give it a listen because she was an awesome guest. On that podcast, we talked about why is Paramount not celebrating Star Trek III like they did with the motion picture and The Wrath of Khan. In fact, Shatner's touring around with The Wrath of Khan, but nothing for Star Trek III. Well, guys, Uncle Jim to the rescue. Trek Talking is going to be working at Fandom Fest on Trek Tracks, which is going to be August 10th and 11th at Proctor's Theater in Schenectady, New York. They have the GE Theater there, and they are going to get their hands on Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. They're going to show it in the big theater, and Robin Curtis is going to be there to answer questions and talk to fans about Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Cool.
The entire third floor is going to be 10 forward. Yours truly, Uncle Jim. I will be there as a Klingon, so you can come and touch my batleth if you want. If you're in the area, I will let you touch it. And we have Star Trek panels that we're going to be doing. We're going to have a Star Trek museum all set up. J.K. Woodard from IDW Comics will be joining us as well to sign some Star Trek comic books for you guys and talk about what goes into producing comic books, as well as all of the other awesomeness which Fandom Fest has planned, including their cavalcade of cars, which they had last year. They're going to have the DeLorean, the Batmobile. I forgot the other cars. There's going to be like 5 or 6 cars that you guys, the Ghostbusters Ecto-1 is going to be there. They're going to have the Gamers Dungeon, Cosplay Corner, the Vendors Room, a free arcade, which is great because last year I got to go and Karen and I got to play Pac-Man with my daughter. And she thought, this is so cheesy. These are cheap graphics, Dad. I'm like, yeah, well, back in the 80s, we'd pump our quarters into this thing like crazy and play it all day. So they have a free arcade so you can bring your kids and play Donkey Kong, Frogger, Pac-Man, Space Invaders. They have them all there for free. And there's going to be Star Trek games going on throughout the entire weekend. And we're going to be doing Star Trek Away missions. We're going to be doing Star Trek Alliance. We're going to be doing Star Trek Attack Wing, as well as a few other Star Trek games. I'm just trying to find some game masters to run those games. We're going to run them every hour on the hour. You can sit down and play a game, or you can just come and watch. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Trek Tracks at Fandom Fest, August 10th and 11th. You can go to fandomfest.org. pick up your tickets. It's going to be a lot of fun. So check it out if you're in the area. All right, guys, that's enough for my shameless plug. I had to get that in there. Speaking of shameless plugs, Eric, you want to start off our news for this week?
Well, if you are the type of person who loves auctions of authentic Star Trek memorabilia, then this story is for you. Authentic Star Trek The Next Generation Captain's Chair, that's right, where Picard's own butt sat, heads to the Prop Store auction in March. The Prop Store auction is back again with another round of Hollywood production artifacts. And while they've offered Star Trek props and relics in the past, this March brings one of the most eye-catching items from the franchise in many years. In their next Entertainment Memorabilia Live auction on March 12th, Prop Store will be putting up for bid the Hero Captain Picard Command Chair from Star Trek The Next Generation, the most famous seat of the 24th century. First introduced in Season 2, the chair remained on the bridge set up through the filming of All Good Things in 1994. Such a prized relic is expected to sell for a price way outside most collectors' budgets. While estimated at $50,000 to a $100,000 price range, our expectation is that an extremely conservative value that will likely be far surpassed during the live auction. Oof. There are several other Star Trek items set to hit the block during the March auction, including some of these highlights. Spock's Kolinar Tabard overlay from Star Trek The Motion Picture. Ooh, that'd be pretty cool. James T. Kirk's Starfleet uniform from Star Trek 2009. Ooh, with the funky deltas. I like that. Worf's Rustai outfit from The Bonding. Ooh, that's cool. That would be super cool. An Arcadian ambassador's mask from Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. I have to look that one up. I don't remember what that looks like. Worf's promotional announcement scroll from Star Trek Generations. Oh, yeah, when they're reading on the ship bow there. And this is my favorite, Tom Paris's Captain Proton jetpack from Star Trek Voyager. How cool is that? Oh, man, I would love to have that Proton pack. The full Prop Store Entertainment Memorabilia Live auction will run March 12th through the 14th out of Los Angeles. The full catalog of items can be viewed at their website today. So, like I said, if you're a collector and you're in that L.A. area and you want to get involved in this amazing opportunity to own some official memorabilia, now's your chance. So
whatever happened to Riker's chair that was right next to Captain Picard? Or the other one?
I just want to say something here. I think it's disgusting that they do this. I think that this stuff should be on display for all fandom to enjoy and not just some rich guy to buy it and stick it in his house somewhere, you know, because we're all Star Trek fans. And I think we should all have the opportunity to see the captain's chair or to see Spock's robe from the motion picture. And it shouldn't be, you know, denied because I don't have $200,000 to bid on the thing. You know, I think all fans should have an opportunity to enjoy it, but that's just my 2 cents worth. So, anyways, Paul, are you ready to share a story with the fans?
Well, I am. This guy seems to be in our story queue every week. It is crazy, just getting all kinds of attention once you've been knighted. I guess that's what happens. Patrick Stewart is going to receive Television Show Person of the Year Award for his work on Star Trek Picard. Now, who gives this out? I'll tell you who does. The International Cinematographers and Publicists Guild, ICGIATSE Local 600, announced that Patrick Stewart will be honored with the Television Show Person of the Year Award at the 61st Annual ICG Publicist Awards in March. Now, I have to ask myself, cinematography and publicity are two really different avocations, right? I mean, they really are. It's kind of like chef and lumberjack. Kind of like, it's very odd. How are they in the same guild? I don't get it. It's very odd to me. This award, though, honors an individual whose accomplishments in television best represent that special spirit traditionally defined as showmanship. We are honored to celebrate Patrick Stewart's venerable career, including the recently completed final season of CBS Studios Paramount Plus's Star Trek Picard, in which he reprised his signature role, first appearing in 1987 in the TV series Star Trek The Next Generation. Patrick Stewart will receive the award at the 61st Annual ICG Publicist Awards Luncheon at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel tomorrow, Friday, March 8th at 2024. So, Mr. Stewart, get a good night's sleep, Sir Patrick, tonight, and get your makeup on and your various accoutrements in fine fettle, and go have a great lunch and enjoy your being show person of the year. Very nice. More accolades for a career well celebrated. Passing that microphone to Charles.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Riker's hometown wants to put a perfectly postured statue up in his name. Valdez, Alaska could follow the likes of Riverside, Iowa, and Bloomington, Indiana. Captain Kirk has one. Janeway has one. If Star Trek fans are going to insist on slowly but surely getting every major character a landmark in their hometown to be, Jonathan Frakes' legendary William Riker is certainly up there as a priority, especially one that celebrates his most iconic tactical maneuver. We are, of course, not talking about his winging an asteroid with a tractor beam like in Star Trek Picard, but the actual Riker maneuver, the wildly gangly way Frakes would mount any given seat by clearing his leg over it. A beloved move that Alaska Trekkies Cameron Harrison, Patrick Campaign, and Jesse Desmond are hoping to take in physical form in a proposed bronze statue of Riker mounting memorial bench for good measure. I'm quite hopeful that the project will cross the finish line. Harrison told the Register of the process to bring the statue to life, which is already has the blessing of Star Trek owners Paramount, who've agreed to work with Frakes to acquire the use of his likeness, should Valdez officials grant permission for the statue and bench. Ken Wilson, director of Valdez Parks and Rec, is quite interested and feels like it would be an easy sell. Fingers crossed, Valdez will approve the honoring of this fictional future son, so that the ideas of a life-size bronze Jonathan Frakes ambles over a bench made a reality.
Wow.
And I rather agree. I think we should have. I think they should. If we've gotten Janeway, and Kirk, well, let's get Frakes, and let's also get Picard out there somewhere.
And a triple.
Well, you know what's funny about that? I've been working with Fandom Fest on Trek Tracks, which we talked about a little bit earlier, and I found out we've been talking a lot about Enterprise, but Jonathan Archer, do you know where he went to school and graduated from, where his family originally was from in the fictional Star Trek universe where he comes from? He was
from Albany, Maine?
Albany, New York.
Oh, he's from Albany, huh?
And he went to SUNY. And one of the writers who wrote the Bible for the show said that they were going to put that in the show, but the show got canceled before they could actually build in his backstory. So it was never mentioned on screen, but it was in the writer's guide. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, good golly, Miss Molly, we need to get a Captain Archer statue put up in Albany at SUNY. So, you know, maybe that's going to be Uncle Jim's next project, and we can talk about that on a future podcast, too. You never can tell. Get Scott Bakula to come on, and, you know, we can do something about that. I was really surprised when I found out.
I mean, don't you think that the Riker maneuver is kind of one of those, like, maneuvers that lends itself to a lot of lewd photograph taking? I think they're going to have to really be careful with the design of this thing. Uh-oh. And the way that he, like, throws his leg over the cherry. You know what I mean?
Well, I read an interview with Frakes.
That was
the
first thing I thought of, dude. I mean, that's going to get, it's going to get, I mean, come on. Basically, it's like, you know, we're all guys here, right? But I think we have to admit that the average psychological age of any male is 11 years old, right? And so it's, don't pretend otherwise, right? And, of course, somebody's going to go to the nearest, like, you know, house or, you know,
Play-Doh store or
shop of ill repute.
Yes.
And duct tape something in that, you know, I mean, it's just, it's like screaming
it wants
for it to happen.
Yes.
I would really like to see something to honor the magical, you know, just leave the frickin' trombone out of it and I'm all behind it. But, you know, love Riker, but good Lord, that is just begging for porn. I mean, like there's no tomorrow.
I think it'd be cool to have him playing trombone. That'd be an awesome, like,
that's my
bronze
least favorite
statue,
part
man.
Of the whole Riker thing is the whole trombone minuet thing. I can't handle it. It's so awful. Oh, my God.
Well, minuet's one thing. But the fact that he plays a trombone is not bad.
Well, he did play
He plays
the
in a jazz band with Data, man. Come on.
Jazz music.
Tracks, which, you know, were phenomenally outstanding in and of their own. He played the trombone in that.
Yeah, I think Minuet's the problem in that episode, not his trombone.
Yeah, I think so too. It's just, I don't know. It's the sound I have challenges with. I guess that's it. It's all me. It's not me. It's not the. Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of lovely trombonists out there, but it's not.
What's another Riker thing that we can all think of that could be put on that statue? I mean, like, what form is he going
to
be?
Well, we would have
making.
To have phases of his beard, I think. Like, you'd have to have four different Riker heads with different phases of the Riker beard.
So there's going to be a lot of statues, okay.
So what we could say is we could do, like, a Riker statue that's just season one, right? But then next to the statue, there are, like, Velcro beards that
there
attendees
you go.
Can come by. And everyone
season
can take
two.
A turn attaching the beard there in their most, you know, preferred style. I think that it's more of an interactive exhibit. You know, I think we got something here. You know, I think
well,
that's
let's just hope
more
that
fun.
That doesn't put it somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
and then, well, that could happen, right? I mean, because that statue was designed is going to get defaced, right?
I got beard pockets.
It's going to be, you know, I'm not going to say out loud what I'm thinking, but you know.
Well,
we got a smart audience.
Could do, like four different statues in various poses of the Riker maneuver, one without the beard, one with the semi-beard, one with the regular beard, and one with the crazy beard, where the maneuver is completed, so you see him transition through the procedure, you know.
Well, I mean, I personally think that they should choose the Riker where he totally rocks that. Remember they go to that planet where, is it like the women are in charge or something, and he wears that outfit where, like,
oh, God.
He's got the open front and everything? I think that's what they should do.
Oh, my God, the mankini. Oh, dear
yeah,
Lord.
There you go.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
That's
yeah.
the worst pose.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 80s
totally
were amazing because everybody thought everything was just okay, and it was just like, man, were we wrong? We're just, like,
know,
wrong
man.
So much. It was just crazy.
I can't fault that outfit too much. I don't know.
Oh, dude, wow. You don't have one at home, do you, that you got at a convention? I
oh,
think
you
maybe you
la,
do.
La, la, la,
wow. We are learning so much about each other tonight. This is why I love this show. It's very educational, right? Wow. Okay,
well,
good to know.
You're right, though. What would Riker, other than the Riker maneuver, what would Riker's pose be? You're right.
But
I think
the things that he's known for, I mean, he's known for being the like womanizer, right? So you can't really do a poster or a statue out of that. Mm-hmm. You got the Riker maneuver, which is absolutely his thing, but it's a little bit lewd and, you know, is problematic in the ways that we've discussed. You got the Riker maneuver, starship maneuver, which is pooping the gas out of your Enterprise E while you're controlling the ship with a joystick, which also is problematic. So there's not a lot of good options for a Riker statue.
I think what we do is we recruit Elizabeth Dennehy, right? And we have that classic scene
oh,
where
the
Riker's
two of them
just
going
getting,
at it.
Yeah, where they're getting in each other's face,
awesome.
Right? He goes, I'll slap you down so hard you won't even think you know what's happening.
That's a great scene.
Like, looming over her, right? Because he's a tall dude, right? He's a tall motherfucker, right? I mean, he really is.
Yep.
Or we do two identical statues and we get our Thomas Riker thing going, because Thomas Riker doesn't get nearly enough cred. So I think we could do that. So
how about that?
Either of those are good ideas.
I love it.
How about we just get Jonathan Frakes on the show and have him describe what he would like?
Yeah. I like that even better. That's the best idea yet, David.
Yeah, he's a busy guy, man. He's a busy
He
dude.
Is.
Yeah, he's
but
kinda...
I'd love to know his opinion on his own.
Oh,
case.
I know. I know. I think I get the impression this is a cat with a sense of humor, right? I'm pretty sure. So I think he would be
even if it's a year out from now.
Yeah, because that's kind of strange. If you guys remember, where is it? In Iowa, we had the people on that were doing the statue for James T. Kirk, the future birthplace. If you guys remember, they weren't allowed to use the likeness of Shatner. Hmm. You guys remember when they were on the show?
Yeah,
and
I think that was one thing about this article that was specifically mentioned, that they actually have been able to do that, which I think is so cool. Because otherwise, it's just fans doing whatever fans want to do, right?
Yeah, they weren't allowed. They couldn't procure the likeness of Shatner. So their Kirk statue is just a generic Starfleet, you know, captain that they're naming James T. Kirk. Whereas this statue is specifically Jonathan Frakes. Which is really cool if you think about it, because I think
the Janeway statue is her, but the proportions of her face were slightly altered so that it doesn't exactly look like her.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird. Why would they do that?
I assume it has to do with contracts or something. I don't really know. I mean, I do know that it was specifically done, and there was an article that we read. Way back when it first came out, and I don't remember if
there are
any details about that.
Yeah, there are two variables that drive just about every single decision in Hollywood when it comes to like actors and likeness rights: money and ego. And that's pretty much, you know, everything. It's just part of one thing is missing more than one person would like, right? And it's unfortunately that's the case. So
money.
Yeah, ego. So it's just like everyone needs a massage, right? You know, it's tough. Not everyone gets what they want, you know? Everyone wants to be, you know? So, but I thought that Janeway statue looked great. I thought, you know, maybe it's not spot on, but I mean, it certainly captures the persona, right? That's the thing. It's
the
like,
smile is perfect.
Yeah, what's the attitude of the character, right? That's what matters. That, to me, a statuary and sculpture is a great art. And it really conveys the... you know the reason the frickin' Kirk thing didn't get done was because of Shatner's ego, right? You've got to know that's probably what it was, right? He jumped up and down and filled his diaper and got all upset about it. And I don't think it looks anything like me. I don't like it. I'm not going to sign off. And it's just bullshit like that, right? Because it's like, you know, it's like, oh, Lord. But, well, of course, we'll all say what a wonderful guy he is the day he passes on. So there you are.
Well, wait. He's going to live on as an AI forever. Remember, he sold his entire likeness to AI so they could have an AI Shatner that will live on forever.
That's great.
So
I'm so excited for
truly
that.
Go away.
Hey, we'll always be here.
Guess what? We're at the end of another show.
We
no.
don't?
Oh, no,
come
not.
On. Let's do another half hour. Come on.
Yeah,
so
we got...
believe it or not, if you guys paid attention during our trivia, those are some tough questions. Those really were. I was really surprised that my Trek experts got the answers so quickly. I thought they would stump you guys. I was,
that was actually kind of weird, Jim. It was kind of weird. But it was actually really hilarious because it was a great way to highlight just how many things he's been involved with and the touch that he's had on Star Trek. So even though it was a little cheesy, I appreciated it because I learned some things that I didn't realize that he had been involved with.
He's a busy guy, and it's great that he's on here. So that's a good get. And I mean, I don't know if you've listened to any interviews with David Gerald before, but he's a good interview. I mean, he really is. He knows a lot. He's a smart guy, and he's been around a lot, you know, and he's seen quite a few things. So he's going to go deep. He'll be a good guy. I guarantee.
So next week, guys, same bat time, same bat channel. Have your questions ready for David Gerald. He's going to be here live taking your questions.
Oh,
you don't want
so
to do
great.
That. And that's going to be our last show with Eric for about 3 weeks. But that's okay. That's okay because
plastic surgery again, Eric. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, I'm getting the other one removed. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I know you have to, you know, get your chin and readjusted, and your, you know.
Well, you know.
All that.
And
there
are many of them out of there too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, get the implants reinflated, whatever you got to do. You know. Have you guys seen Eric? He's got massive pecs. It's just ridiculous, right? It's
yeah.
like he has to get these crazy implants in. It's just
yeah.
nuts.
So,
you
got to
do what you
got to
do,
yeah.
man. Age,
yeah.
age before beauty. That's what I say.
Well, you got to do what you got to do.
You do.
Well, we're gonna do something we have not done in a long time, and we're not going to be talking about Star Trek. We're going to go back to the 80s, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite sci-fi shows. So you guys are definitely going to get to the chopper. We're going to have some fun. We are going to talk about 80 shows. We're going to skip over Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. We know that was a great movie. Talk about it all the time. We're not going to talk about Star Wars either because there are a plethora of great 80s sci-fi that we are going to talk about. So you guys are definitely going to want to tune in for that. We're also going to be doing a Star Trek Discovery because our podcast is going to be on the day Discovery premieres. We will not be talking about the episode that night. So the night that Star Trek Discovery premieres, which is the 4th, we are going to be talking about Discovery, and we're just going to be, you know, remembering Discovery, talking about some of our favorite parts and what we'd like to see happen and that type of thing. And by that time, Eric will be back. So that's what we have planned in the future shows, but you definitely want to tune in for next week. And I want to take this opportunity to say thank you so much to Paul for hanging out and Trek talking with us. So thank you so much, Paul.
Fun times tonight, gentlemen. A really good time. Really fun and lighthearted. And I'm super excited to get to chat with David Gerald next week. That's going to be a super fun episode. So should be good stuff.
And, you know, I'll see if I can maybe get Denise on the show or something. I'll keep working my magic. So we'll see what I can do. I've pulled better things out of my hat before. So we'll see. I also want to say thank you to Eric for hanging out with us tonight. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely, guys. And thanks for being on board with talking about Sela. That was super fun.
Yeah, we haven't talked about comic books in a while. Even though I read the wrong one, I'm old. I can do that. So it was still cool. I'm going to have to go back. I'm going to have to read that one after the podcast. I'm going to have to go
to
my Kindle.
You're not
going to
be sorry, Jim. You're not going to be sorry.
I'm going to definitely look it up because I read the next one. I read the wrong one. So anyways, thank you so much to David for hanging out and talking with us, even though he didn't share the popcorn with all of us. That's okay. Thank you, David.
Oh, oops.
Oops.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good fun. It was fun talking to you all, guys.
It always is. And last, but definitely not least, thank you so much to Charles for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you so much, Charles.
Thank you. I miss Comic Corner, so it's great to have a good comic review again.
Yeah, it definitely was. And thank you to the caller who called but didn't talk to us. It was great to have you on the line. From Washington, D.C. was the area code because I looked it up. And So the listener in Washington hung out for the whole show but never talked. That's okay. That's absolutely fine. There's various ways to listen to the podcast, and if you choose to do it that way, power to you. But thank you to listening anyways. We appreciate it.
Was so it the president?
It could have been because he was doing the State of the Union address, so maybe Trek Talking was on his cell phone.
Woo-hoo.
Who knows? You never can tell. And one thing I just wanted to say, that I'm very proud of my fellow Vermonters, because my fellow Vermonters did something that no other state in the primaries has had the guts to do so far. And I was so happy when I heard this. I posted it on Facebook, but the people here in Vermont did not elect President Trump. Nikki Haley won Vermont in the Republican primaries. The only state that Nikki Haley won was Vermont. So congratulations to all those Vermonters that knew better than to vote for Donald Trump. Thank you so much. I'm so proud of you. All right, guys. So at any rate, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, saying please stay safe and be good to each other. Star Trek fans are the best fans. You better remember that. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
I do not sign off on my likeness. I do not approve of this. It's not good enough. I don't have a chin that big. My cheeks are narrow, very narrow cheeks. And look at my eyebrows. It's nothing like that.
Much more hair. Much more hair.
More hair. Look at me. Come on. Nose. All right. The Roman nose.
Night, y'all.
Good night, everybody.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.
Hello, you have reached the Q Continuum. We are unable to get to the phone right now because we are busy living in a plane of existence your feeble mortal mind cannot possibly comprehend. Furthermore, it's pointless to leave a message because we, of course, already knew that you would call, and we simply do not care. Have a nice day.